All year round, Frontier Home Products and Design has what you need to make your home comfortable and beautiful. Relax on a new timber tech deck designed by Frontier's experts. A new fireplace from Frontier Home Products Fireplace Gallery adds warmth and serenity to any home. Beauty and versatility at Frontier Home Products and Design Center, 4213 Peachtree, 5th next to the Bayfront Highway.
Frontier Home Products and Design Center. Discover a new frontier.
PA contractor number PA039007.
Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie, PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
We're glad to welcome back to our microphones Tim Broderick. He is the executive director of People for Life here, Erie's pro-life organization. Good to see you, Tim. Happy January.
Thank you.
when a lot of activity happens.
Thanks,
for the pro-life
Joel.
Movement, right?
Thank you. It's great to be here. Appreciate it. And yeah, it's a busy time for us.
We're coming off of a very well-attended pro-life breakfast. Talk about that. Talk about the tenor of the room, some of the people that were there, and what your speaker talked about.
Well, I have a really, really good feeling about this year's breakfast. Everything went very, very smoothly, if I can say so.
Wonderful.
And a nice bunch of people and a nice bunch of special guests and a little bit of excitement. I'll tell you a story. I was at Walmart Thursday evening. Breakfast is Saturday morning. I noticed an email from the speaker. He didn't think he was going to be able to make it in person.
Oh, my.
And I guess I can tell you the whole story because he shared it in the room. But they were predicting a big blizzard in South Bend. He teaches at Notre Dame.
Okay.
So it wasn't looking good. And so he was going to still try to do what he could to make it.
Sure.
But to complicate things, his wife is pregnant with her fourth child.
Yeah.
And she's taking care of an 18-month-old and two kids that are a little bit bigger. And the pregnancy isn't going so well.
Mm-hmm.
He hoped he'd have his mother-in-law out there to fill in while he was gone and would have even come a day early. But, you know, there was just a lot of things working against us. And by midday Friday, it was clear that he wasn't going to be able to make it in person. But thankfully, he's a professor and well-versed in Zoom meetings and that sort of thing. And we have a great audio-visual guy, too, with Grisey.
Yes, right.
And a quick call, it was like, oh, no problem. We'll get that hooked up. And it was great. It was maybe in some regards better than having the speaker there in person. We had the big screens.
Sure, yeah.
Everybody could hear and see. I would love to meet the gentleman in person. Very interesting guy.
What was the nature of his talk? What did he focus on?
Well, as a lawyer and a philosopher,
okay,
he's working on his PhD in philosophy right now, JD from Harvard, Oxford Rhodes Scholar.
Wow.
On and on. But he wasn't what you might expect. Very down to earth. He's a dad with three kids,
yeah,
and a younger fella. So we wanted to talk about, he thought he'd throw in something about the lay of the land since the Dobbs decision that struck down Roe versus Wade. And I thought that was sort of a natural thing to have. But he covered a lot of ground. It was like many different aspects all pushed together and wrapped up with a bow, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, what else did he talk about? He went into the history of abortion laws.
Yeah.
And explain that.
So he kind of took like a legal approach in a lot of ways as a lawyer?
Or? Yeah, a lot of it.
Yeah.
He also
mm-hmm.
pulled in his experience of teaching, talking to students.
Mm-hmm.
And he shared some of his experiences in going to school. And he stressed the success he's had with taking the kind of rational, logical, fact-based approach. And, you know, he gave examples of where people who were absolutely close to the discussion finding out, and this many times when it pertained to students, finding out that, hey, I really didn't realize where the other side is coming from.
Yeah.
And, you know, I might not totally get it or agree with you, but I appreciate, you know, your well-reasoned presentation. And he's talked to some pretty high power, in some pretty high power institutions. He also talked about experience going to school. One of his professors was Peter Singer. Have you?
I've heard that name. Yeah,
yeah. He's kind of far out there, but he's a very, to use the term again, high-powered professor at Princeton. And his theory is that you're not really a human being until you know yourself, you know what your plans are, your hopes and dreams, and so forth. So very logically, according to that line of reasoning, he doesn't think anyone has a right to life, I mean a right not to be killed, until at least 1 year old, 1 year after birth. And
seems so arbitrary, doesn't it?
Seems, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's definitely a judgment call. Yeah. And what that amounts to, according to our guest speaker,
yeah,
is you're either valuable, you know, where we talk about life, liberty, pursuit, happiness, human rights. Either those come from what type of being you are, or it comes to what kind of performance you can turn in. You know, how good you are at things, how well you can dream and hope and these kinds of things. And it's a sliding scale. So what you have is you earn your rights. And if you're particularly, let's say, philosophical, can dream, hope, understand, perceive the world, then you have more of a right to be treated like a human being than somebody that's maybe not quite so perceptive. And you know what? That reminds me of, if I can digress.
Keep going, yeah. You're on a roll. I'm like my mouth is wide open, but keep going.
It just reminded me of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
And of course, his big issue was race and slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And I for one, see a big similarity between the issues, the right to life, the right to freedom. Abraham Lincoln gave a speech, and I'm not that much of a historian that I can tell you where and when, but he said, so you think you have a right to own other people because your skin is lighter? Then watch out, because the first time somebody comes along with a skin that's lighter than yours, you're a slave. And he gave a few other examples, mm-hmm, of that those kind of criteria. So I prefer to be treated like a human being just because I am one, and not because because of my social credit score, like the Chinese are doing now.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, it goes right back to the originating documents. We're born with these inalienable rights. And so I'm thinking about my 5-month-old grandson.
Right.
I mean, he is fully human. You know, he delights his parents every single day. He delights his grandparents and everybody around him every single day. To deny him of humanity until he can produce, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and generally, you don't have to be a philosopher or a theologian to come up with these things. It's common sense. It's natural.
Wow.
And to take that a little bit farther, don't we feel more of a duty to protect and care for a baby?
Yeah.
For those that can't really fend for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what'd be worse than not feeding your children, you know?
Right.
And I guess we just have to get over the idea that all of these human rights and traits don't just automatically come out of nowhere when the baby's separated from his or her mom.
Yeah. Talk about who was at, again, you had a huge crowd for the pro-life breakfast. A lot of elected officials, generally, at least I've noticed, this is, tell me if I'm wrong or not, but generally that election, you know, that presidential election year always is kind of a big year for you guys. Have you noticed that as well?
Well, I've been saying that right along, and a lot of us have. It's going to be quite a year.
Yeah.
Quite a ride. I mean,
you had a lot of visiting elected officials, too, this time.
Well, yeah, and cynically, you might think maybe a few more than usual because it's an election year.
Yeah, yeah.
But that you don't really have to be cynical. I mean, they have to work harder and get their message out. But Mike Kelly is a staple at the breakfast.
Right.
It was last year that he wasn't there, and that was the big surprise.
Mm-hmm.
He was under the weather.
Right.
But he showed up, not just showed up, we invited him to come back for the Erie March for Life a few weeks later. And there he was, you know, out in the freezing cold.
Wow.
After just having gotten over something.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something to have we've never had a congressman or woman at our Erie March for Life before. But so he was there, and everybody enjoys having him get up there and say a few words.
Sure.
He's never shy about his convictions, and so that's great for us. And I saw
a unique picture on social media of Bishop Persico from the Roman Catholic Diocese,
yes,
along with Sheikh Alashani. I'm sure I'm pronouncing him right, but he's a Facebook friend of mine. I know his kids.
Mine too.
You know, and I just thought that was a wonderful representation of what it means to be pro-life in Erie, Pennsylvania.
It means a lot to me. Sheikh Mazin Al-Salani.
Yes.
And he's not just a local sheikh either. You know, he travels the country, travels the world. He's an Islamic scholar.
Yep.
And, so I'm glad he's there. And,
of course, you know, you had all kinds of Protestant pastors and other priests. And it was really a lot of faith folks there, too.
Yep, and understandably. I mean, Christians are known to care about other people.
Yep.
But if I could just say a little more, we want it to be known. You don't have to be go to church three times a week or be particularly devout. There's nothing wrong with being devout. But the idea about the idea of having a problem with abortion or other forms of deliberate killing and thinking these things are going to solve our problems is people get it, kind of independent of where they are in their faith.
Mm.
And, there's this big contrast between Islam and Christianity, Catholicism. But I'd like to mention that first time I met Mazin Al-Salani, he shared with me a copy of a newsletter that he started when he first arrived in Erie.
Yeah.
And the very first copy had a front page article explaining why abortion is wrong.
Wow.
So he's the real deal. And he comes practically every year as well.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it's good for people to see that. We don't want to be exclusive.
Yeah.
And the bishop, same thing. He's there every chance he gets, practically every year.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll be retiring pretty soon.
Yeah, they're going to force him, huh? I guess, 70 or 75?
75, I think.
Yeah.
We had a state senator, two state representatives, congressmen. Good stuff.
Tim, you had your pro-life breakfast, and then the annual March for Life, January 19th, down in Washington, D.C., and always a big crowd. Roe got overturned in 22.
Correct.
What happened last year, and what do you expect this year?
Yeah, well, the problem is the march is so big, and if you're on the ground there, it's really hard to know exactly how big that crowd is.
Okay, yeah.
But having said that, it looked like just as big as ever last year.
Okay.
And a lot of kids. I enjoy seeing the Ivy League student groups.
Okay.
Princeton Pro-Life.
Interesting.
A couple years ago, the kids from Princeton carried the main March for Life banner. A little bit different route last year, to symbolize the fact that now the pressure, the focus isn't so much on the Supreme Court as it is on Congress. So we kind of circled halfway around the Capitol building, but did end up at the Supreme Court.
Okay.
So I saw the time lapse too. It just goes on and on and on. So,
are there themes for the march every year?
Yes, there are, but it's kind of a long one this year.
Oh, it is. Okay.
I'm not.
Well, it says with every woman for every child. Is that a generic theme?
With every woman. Okay, maybe it's not so long.
Yeah. With every woman for every child is what the 51st annual trip. I remember when Peg Mitchell was putting these together. What?
Well, that's
back
a while.
In the 70s,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, started in 73.
Wow.
And I was just a volunteer for People for Life through the 80s and early 90s, got more involved in the mid 90s. So my very first March for Life was 96.
Okay, wow.
And haven't missed one yet, except for the COVID year when it was canceled.
It was canceled itself, yeah.
Yeah, so I've seen it grow over the years, mm-hmm. That's for sure.
There's various activities. I guess the students will have a gathering. There'll be a reception with the congressman and so on. Do you get a sense that the conversation is turning? Like when you look at it nationally, you know, now with the overthrow of Dobbs, like what are you hearing, let's say, from the National Right to Life Federation or whatever?
Well, definitely there's more of an emphasis on state action, state legislation, state elections. Of course, these things were always considered important, but now we can be more effective at that level. And
is there a push for a nationwide abortion ban or some kind of a...
Not at the moment.
Okay.
I would say especially given the political realities.
Yeah.
You know, nothing's going to go anywhere right now as long as we have the current administration. And.
Do you think that would be a winning strategy for, let's say, a Republican presidential candidate to say, hey, I'm for 15 weeks or I'm for a heartbeat bill or what have you? I mean, because you've kind of heard that sprinkled in, you know, the press is trying to nail down some of these, especially when the crowd, when the number of people running was a lot larger. Now that we're down to only three, I'm not sure you're going to get much of a definitive answer, right? I mean,
yeah, I think there's a lot that can be done at the federal level, but there are a lot of people that kind of think it's all over with at the federal level. And I think that's unfortunate that we're thinking that way. As far as a hard limitation of abortion at the federal level, I think it's too early to tell where we're going to be able to go with that in the near term. But we have a lot of opportunity at the state levels. And we see so far that, as we were talking earlier, Pennsylvania used to be in the lead. We were way in the forefront with our Abortion Control Act, which really just had common sense limitations that very few people ought to disagree with. Mm. And certainly in the past, it was very popular. But that having to do with looking out for the well-being of the pregnant woman, and avoiding the case where the baby's viable and is deliberately killed, although the baby could be delivered alive and protected. These are kind of the things that are addressed in the Abortion Control Act. And
what year was that? Was that mid-90s?
It was mid-90s. It was up and down to the Supreme Court twice.
Wow.
But it was pro-life Governor Bob Casey Sr. that was the big force behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I think another misfocus is the idea that this is only about a legal abortion, yes or no, across the board. And I prefer to talk in terms of limits. And, you know, some people think about the case of the life of the mother. If something has to be done to prevent the death of the mother. Well, that's never been off the table. That's always been there, that concern, you know. And there, in a sense...
But wasn't that just an issue what was that, Texas or whatever?
Yeah, every place there's a law, the other side seems to find a test case, and then a doctor that claims to be totally flummoxed as to what the law says.
But yeah, like that doctor could have made a medical choice.
Yes.
That would have been within the law of Texas.
Yes, and in my opinion, those need to, and maybe.
So these are all test cases, basically.
Yeah, but I think the pro-life side needs to become a little more adept at making it clear that these exceptions are there.
Right.
And trying to get the word out to the general public, because we have a media that will bend over backwards to distort what the law says, to kind of present that worst case scenario example, and they like to talk about bans, not limits.
The 10-year-old that needed to have, being forced to have her this baby or whatever.
Case in Ohio too, if I'm not mistaken.
So again, these, there's always going to be. I mean, it's a very emotionally charged issue. So there's always going to be these cases that rise to the top to get the clicks
right
on the media websites.
And
right?
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about anything other than healthy mom, healthy baby, routine pregnancy, we're only talking maybe 5 or 7%.
Yeah.
And within that 7%. Some of the problems are minor, not mm-hmm. that all are minor, but
most of these laws, we have to go take the break. But my understanding is that most of these laws give a medical practitioner lots of latitude.
Yes,
right.
The
idea that it's between a woman and her doctor, it's still
and the family. Yeah.
And the family, it's still a real thing. I want to pivot to Pennsylvania. And the current political kind of lay of the land, if you will. And let me throw something out at you, and please push back as you will. It feels like Dobbs was a moment where the pro-life movement, if the pro-life movement is the dog, it caught the car. And now it's like, what do you do? What does the dog do with the car once it catches the car? Was the pro-life movement ready for the Dobbs decision?
Well, we should have been. We've been talking about getting ready for the overthrow of Roe v. Wade for 50
yes.
years.
Yeah.
I'll confess that I, for one, didn't think we were so near that having that happen, even though President Trump put in 3 conservative justices. Mm-hmm. We just never thought they'd bite off the whole thing at once, or at least I didn't.
Right.
And then a lot of people thought the problem was solved. Well, little did they know. I got a note in the mail the other day that said, you guys won the battle, but you lost the war.
Interesting. What do they mean by that?
Well, I guess the battle was Roe v. Wade, but the war is legal abortion or pro-life attitudes, the fight for hearts and minds. I don't know for sure. He sent a nice donation, though, so I think he still believes in what we're doing.
Well, and I think he's onto something there of this is more than a legal struggle for the protection of life. It is the idea of changing hearts and minds, and that's why it is heartwarming when you think about young people like Princeton Students for Life or Gannon Students for Life, being there because so much of pop culture, so much of modern culture is a definitive, pro-abortion stance, right? I mean, to the point that it's just so easy to get an abortion these days.
Well, laws and public policies also affect minds and hearts. Like our speaker said last Saturday, the law is a teacher, and we're looking back on 50 years of legal abortion. And as time went along, it was safe, legal, and rare, according to Bill Clinton, and then it went to safe and legal. And then in the last eight or 10 years, it's become the greatest thing since sliced bread, according to the other side.
Right, yeah. Celebrate your abortion kind of thing.
But on the other hand, there are hundreds of thousands of women who had abortions who found it to be a terrible experience, mm-hmm. and who looked back on it. Last year at the March for Life, we had a lady from Erie who carried a sign, after 23 years, I still regret my abortion, wow. you know. And there's a lot of people, people might not believe it, but I mean, I'm a believer because I've talked to so many women who, and you don't have to lead them on, they spontaneously want to pour out their hearts so many times.
Right.
We faced a tremendous backlash after June 2022, and I don't know if you can ever be prepared for that, but the media, by and large, is committed to a totally pro-abortion propaganda line. And there are certain states that have gone farther than Roe v. Wade ever intended to go. And when it comes to, you know, the strategy of constitutional amendments and referenda, we had some bad results. One best example is probably Ohio last election. And they put in a radical constitutional amendment that if you poll people and really explain what was going on, they would want nothing to do with it. It didn't just deal with abortion. It dealt with parental rights and things of a sexual reproductive matter, cutting out parents from having any say. And now it's in the Constitution of Ohio. But they say the side that spends the most money on when it comes to a referendum always wins, or practically always wins. And then combine that with disinformation, misinformation, if I could say lies, yeah. from the other side, I believe a lot of people really didn't know what was happening. And in fact, an example I've got from our friends just up here in Ashtabula County, there were signs that said, I might get confused, I guess it was issue one, and the sign said, vote yes on issue one, and it was a sign that was modified from, it was a sign that was originally designed by Ohio Right to Life, but they changed things around because there was a campaign in the primary election too.
Oh, okay.
So they had this sign, but they changed it around to give the opposite message, but kept the Ohio Right to Life logo on there.
Oh, wow.
And I saw a picture of the sign that was in the front yard of a prominent local elected official. You know, how he said, yeah, that was one deceptive sign that he really loved when he was confronted about it. Mm-hmm. So it goes to show we have to do a better job of explaining our what we're doing and where we're coming from. And that goes not only for people like folks in People for Life, but our elected officials, our candidates. I'm convinced that they really don't need to back off. They just need to do a better job of presenting. And they don't want to come across, they have to make it clear that they're not against
Who's
women.
They?
The candidates.
Candidates okay,
mostly.
Yeah.
It can still be a winning issue. Our speaker last January mentioned, despite the setbacks in states like Ohio, mm-hmm. we have very pro-life candidates that won by large margins. And I'll just mention Ron DeSantis, Mike DeWine right here in Ohio.
Right.
Yeah. Marco Rubio, Glenn Youngkin in Virginia. Mm-hmm. These people are, they don't run away from the issue. And they're doing well. And, you know, when it comes to a state like Virginia, that's all the more impressive, right?
Yeah, it's a tough state to win.
Sure.
On this issue. The the concept of now what do you do? Many states had kind of a trigger law that said if Roe v. Wade would get overturned, this will be our law. And you saw it on both sides, right? You saw liberal states maybe like in New York or whatever
getting ready for
the ability to have it, you know. Abortion on demand, 9 months, it didn't matter, you know, and that's what
and
the law
that's,
of the
that's
is.
The matter. That's what the law, in fact, says. People say that, you know, nobody has an abortion just before birth, but a lot of people have. There are, that's not a judgmental, and I don't want to be like that.
Right.
There are tens of thousands of abortions in the last 3 months.
Wow.
That the telling thing is even though they say there aren't any abortions weeks before birth, if you propose a law to just ensure that that's the case, they'll say no, they don't want to have a law prohibiting abortion in the last few weeks of pregnancy.
The other trigger laws were that, yes, we're going to either ban it or do a heartbeat bill or do 15 weeks or something like that.
And some of those states did revert to kind of pre-Roe v. Wade laws.
The idea of Roe getting overturned by Dobbs was to bring it back to the states and to have basically the contemporary cultural mores decide. And so when you're in a New York, it's super different than North Carolina, right?
Well, that was part of it, yeah. The people ought to be able to decide the standards for their own community.
So where's PA at? Where's Pennsylvania at, do you think? I mean, again, like we said before the break, we had the Abortion Control Act, 24 weeks.
Yeah.
And then provisions for the health of the mother as far as, all the different things that are required.
Right? The Abortion Control Act survives at this point.
Yeah.
But we're facing challenges. There's a constitutional amendment that's been introduced.
Talk about that. What is that now?
This is at the state level again. It's been introduced in at least the state House of Representatives. Uh-huh. And it would take all decisions, as they say, regarding reproductive, anything having to do with the reproductive system, it would make every woman and girl completely autonomous. And the first thing that sticks out is this includes girls under the age of 18, girls, what have you, 10, 13, 14 years old. Makes them totally independent of their parents. But so this would be one of those cases where the law would be absolutely no restrictions whatsoever on abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. This is only a medical procedure. That's why we like to emphasize abortion is not healthcare. But this is a medical procedure, and then it can't be distinguished from any other medical procedure. Or even a dental procedure. And so there's no provisions for making sure the woman realizes what's going to happen. In other words, informed consent, waiting period, special conditions for the parents. Mm. For the parents. When my understanding is once a female is pregnant, she does enjoy a greater leeway in making her own medical decisions. But when you apply that to abortion, then we have public school officials, for instance, sneaking the young woman off, young girl, off for an abortion, and the parents don't know, tough, So we're facing threats like that in Pennsylvania. We've also, now this isn't necessarily because of Dobbs, but I think perhaps Governor Shapiro felt he had the wind at his sails and his back, and he decided to cut funding for pregnancy support centers around the state, and not only pregnancy support, parenting support, adoption services, Homes for Unwed Mothers. That's a program started, we mentioned already, Governor Bob Casey Sr., a very pro-life individual who wanted to see something like this just to give another alternative to the abortion scenario. And so it's been great, a smashing success. Other states have seen the Pennsylvania program and instituted the same approach in their own states. And so this was state money that was managed by an organization called Real Alternatives. Mm-hmm. And if anything, they held the pregnancy centers to higher standards than what they might otherwise, but not that was a needed thing. But they were very, very careful that, this didn't amount to religious evangelization or anything like that. Oh, well, that's gone as of the end of the year. And in this part of the state, at least, Catholic Charities, which offered adoption and pregnancy counseling services, felt they needed to shut it down because wow. they took such a hit. Yeah. We've, as an organization, People for Life has been trying to put a lot of emphasis on that ever since the word first came out. And we devoted a lot of time at our community outreach educational booths to let people know about that. And we were hoping that we could somehow keep the money coming.
Yeah.
And we're certainly not going to give up on that.
Let's talk about the nature of abortion in 2024. And right. and I think people need to understand that the old way is not necessarily what's going on currently. Isn't most abortions now considered medical abortions, the RU486, you know, I can't pronounce the name of the pill, but most abortions now are done with pills.
Well, it appears to be right around 50%.
Is it? Okay.
50%. And that's, you know, in the first several months of pregnancy, where most abortions occur in any mm-hmm. case. Not only is the larger share by the chemical abortion, but there's been a lot of movement in the government to make it easier and easier to get that type of an abortion, to the point where they're getting rid of all of the pretty much routine health and safety precautions wow. that were instituted and insisted on when the government first approved the mifepristone. Is the main component.
Isn't it almost inevitable, though, that if you could get Viagra on mail order, that this will become some kind of a national mail order thing?
I don't know.
I guess I'm wondering how effective these laws are going to be when you have basically abortions available with just a couple of pills.
Well, in a nutshell, I don't think that's a problem in making the laws okay. effective, except to the extent that there are black market sources right. from other countries. Perhaps a publicity campaign to remind people that you really don't know what you're getting when you're dealing with other countries. You have sure. no recourse. The comparison with Viagra kind of made me laugh a little because, hear that a lot.
Do you really?
I don't know how to say this, but the abortion pill is a lot bloodier and painful than Viagra.
Right.
And there are distinct health risks that are taken. And now it's to the point, thanks to the Biden administration, we're on the verge. And I don't know if we're exactly there yet. This is all in flux. There are legal court cases going on. What they're trending towards is, instead of going in and getting a proper examination, an ultrasound, for instance, to rule out tubal pregnancy,
sure.
Foregoing a Rogam shot if you're Rh positive, and if this isn't done properly, you run a much higher risk of problems in future pregnancies. Mm. So what the other side, including the Biden administration, obviously wants is just a quick phone call or maybe at most a Zoom call to the local
yeah.
Planned Parenthood,
yeah.
And then a prescription written sent to the local CVS
yeah.
or Rite Aid or Walgreens for an abortion pill. And then you're going to endure days and days, if not a week or more, of horrible cramping and pains, a lot of blood loss, and then the prospect of seeing that very small, tiny son or daughter. Yeah. And how many people are going to prepare a woman for the mental trauma, emotional mm-hmm. trauma that she'll experience in cases like that?
I want to ask you about Erie because we're running out of time. We've got Tim Broderick on from People for Life. You know, I used to think, well, let me ask you the question. Is Erie considered a pro-life city?
Well, it definitely is considered a pro-life city. We have a fine reputation. We had an abortion facility from 2003 to 2007, and that didn't last. So that kind of keeps the narrative going.
It just makes me wonder, with the changes that have happened in abortion, is that by not having that facility, certainly lives have been saved, but is that argument almost moot now with the proliferation of these pills, I guess?
Right. Well, I don't, in terms of Pennsylvania, you still have to go and see
you
the abortionist.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we do, part of the Abortion Control Act is reporting. Every January, the state releases statistics. And so we know pretty much how many women from Erie County had an abortion. Oh, we don't know who they are. That's beside the point. But and we know how many abortions were done in county by county. Mm-hmm. But Erie, well, we're not pro-life in that the pro-life candidates don't do exceptionally well here.
Right.
But that's not to say. I mean, it's not open shut that way. I'd like to see, you know, the pro-life all the way up and down the ticket prevail in Erie County. And it's just, what I'm trying to say is it's better in other counties.
Interesting. Yeah, we're a little more in the middle or to the left on that, I would think, you know. Final thoughts. This is a very important year for the pro-life movement, you know, when it comes to a presidential election year.
Elections make all the difference. Boy, I mean, going from President Trump to President Biden, it couldn't be more crystal clear. I mean, it's just been a catastrophe the last 3 years, you know. And we don't know what the future holds. You know, we're talking about the March for Life at the federal level. Mm-hmm. One Supreme Court justice could throw everything the other direction now. And you know, that's another thing. You know, the president appoints federal judges up and down the system.
Right.
President Trump put on almost countless pro-life judges. And a lot of times all that means is conservative judges who are going to go by the law and not bend over backwards to further the pro-abortion cause.
We'll leave it there. Tim Broderick, thanks for coming on. We appreciate your candor and for sharing all about this very important topic.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@TalkErie.com.